Hello, everyone. Welcome to this first Tech Doctor podcast of 2013. Happy New Year. I can promise you that this podcast will be different from any podcast that I've done before. Unlike all the others, I'm not going to be talking about accessible technology this time. I'm going to be describing a trip that my family recently took down to the great white continent of Antarctica. It was really one of those once-in-a-lifetime adventures, and I'm very excited to tell you all about it. I do recommend that you wear headphones to listen to this podcast, as I will be playing sound samples of animals and of National Geographic experts giving their opinions on some of the things that we're seeing and explaining some of what's going on. And you'll get a lot more out of it if you wear headphones. Of course, as all of you know, Antarctica is the southernmost continent down at the South Pole. And getting there is not trivial. So the first thing I'm going to do is explain how we went about it. In December of 2011, my family and I began exploring the possibility of making a trip to Antarctica. We discovered that National Geographic sponsors an expedition to Antarctica where they take guests like us. And the way that they go about doing that is they combine forces with an expedition company called Lindblad. And Lindblad is a company that specializes on providing people with expeditions all over the world. They provide the ship and the crew, and National Geographic provides the expertise, the scientist, the naturalist, the underwater photographers, and all the people that are needed to educate us as we go through Antarctica. There were, of course, whale experts and penguin experts and a very knowledgeable group of National Geographic staff that we were all able to interact with. So we started planning the trip in December of 2011. We actually made the trip in December 2012. On December 17th, 2012, my wife Vicky, my son Graham, and I flew from Houston to Miami, where we met up with the rest of my family of origin, including my parents, my sister and her husband, their two sons, and the wife of their eldest son. So there were 10 of us who went on this expedition. On Monday night, December 17th, we flew all night, taking us from Miami to Buenos Aires, Argentina, where we arrived early Tuesday morning on December 18th. We spent the day exploring Buenos Aires. Really a delightful city. We went on a tour of the city. We walked around some. We had a very nice meal there, and we stayed in a hotel in Buenos Aires on that Tuesday night. Buenos Aires, of course, is in the southern hemisphere, as is Antarctica. So they are in summertime in December, January, and February. So it was between 70 and 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Very lovely weather in Buenos Aires. We got up on Wednesday morning and we flew from Buenos Aires to the southernmost city in Argentina called Ushuaia. And it's about a four-hour flight from Buenos Aires to Ushuaia. Ushuaia is a very cold and wet place. I said it was about 75 or 80 degrees Fahrenheit in Buenos Aires. When we got off the plane in Ushuaia, it was in the 40s. So we experienced a tremendous change in weather going from Buenos Aires, flying 4 hours south to Ushuaia. Now, Ushuaia was originally a prison colony, a penal colony, where Argentina sent its prisoners. The prison has now been closed, and so there are no longer prisoners there, but there's still a museum of the prison. We toured that. Ushuaia has become a leading electronics manufacturing center. They manufacture and assemble most of the cell phones that are distributed in South America. It's also become something of a tourist spot because it's the place in Argentina where you have to go if you're going to catch a ship going to Antarctica. So we spent the afternoon in Ushuaia on a catamaran, touring around the harbor there and learning a bit about Ushuaia. Sometime between 4 and 5 o'clock, we actually got to board our ship, which is called the National Geographic Explorer. Now, this ship was customized by Lindblad to be able to navigate the very icy waters of Antarctica. As you probably know, Antarctica is just filled with icebergs, and it takes a very special ship with a very talented captain and crew to be able to navigate that ice and not get stuck. We had a wonderful captain and crew on our ship. Our captain's name was Oliver Cruz, and he was a true expert. He could navigate places within the ice that even the British Navy was afraid to go, or so we were told. It was a really exciting adventure with Captain Cruz. As a totally blind person, never having done anything like this before, I had a bit of trepidation about how I would be able to manage the rough waters that we might encounter on the ship and also the landings going to shore in Antarctica. But I'm pretty agile and reasonably athletic, and I was confident that I could handle it. We did ask Lindblad before we went, did they think that I would have problems because of my blindness on this expedition? And they said no. Unfortunately, the ship doctor apparently didn't get the memo, because as soon as we got on board the ship, she came to our cabin and talked with us and said she had some major concerns about whether or not a blind person could handle this expedition. I told her that I was confident that I could do it. She was concerned because if you have a medical emergency while in Antarctica, it's a 48-hour trip by ship back to civilization before you can get any medical attention other than just the first aid that could be provided on the ship. But after I told her that I felt I could manage it, she wasn't necessarily real happy about the idea, but she didn't bother me the rest of the trip. It turned out that the ship's crew and the National Geographic staff were very welcoming, very helpful, and seemed very comfortable with my doing the things that we were doing on this trip. You have to go to Antarctica by boat, and there are two places in the world from where you can start out to get there. One of them is where we started from Ushuaia, Argentina, and the other is New Zealand. It takes longer to get there from New Zealand, but it is a place that people will go from to Antarctica. To go from Argentina to Antarctica, you have to cross a body of water that's called the Drake Passage. And the Drake Passage is known for its very rough waters at times. You never really know what you're going to get in the Drake Passage. Sometimes it can be very, very calm, and then they call it the Drake Lake because it's very smooth to cross. Other times it can be very rough, and they call it the Drake Shake because your ship really rocks a lot. Our crossing from Argentina to Antarctica was not the Drake Lake, but it wasn't as rough as it sometimes is. We were told it was about average. We had really high winds, and our ship really did rock a lot for the 48 hours that it takes to cross the Drake Passage. They told you to always keep one hand for yourself and one hand for the ship, meaning that you needed to always be prepared to grab a rail or a rope or a grab bar or something, because you would bounce off the walls, literally, if you didn't grab onto something. So it was fairly rough crossing. At least it felt that way to me. Fortunately, I didn't get seasick, but it was hard to move around while the ship was in the Drake Passage. Let's listen to what our expedition leader, Lisa, had to say about our crossing the Drake Passage.
We're off on our trip to Antarctica, and of course, in order to get there, we must travel across the dreaded Drake Passage. However, our voyage this time has been relatively smooth. Certainly some wind, but it's helped to bring the seabirds.
Lisa was an awesome expedition leader, and as you can tell from her voice there, she turns everything into an opportunity on an expedition. So when the high winds came up, yes, they really made the ship rock, but they did bring in lots of seabirds. One of the things that people go to Antarctica for is to watch whales, because in the summer, a huge whale population comes to Antarctica to feed. Let's see what our whale expert, Stephanie, had to tell us about the Antarctica whales.
What's exciting about being in Antarctica is not only the ice, the penguins, but that the whales are starting to return. It's the time of year where the krill is in abundance, and we'll see whales hopefully feeding, and they're coming down along the Antarctic Peninsula, because this is the time for them to eat as much as possible to pack on the fat layer that will sustain them through the long winter months.
One of the things that Stephanie mentioned there was krill, and I didn't know what krill was before going to Antarctica, but a krill is an animal, sort of like a shrimp, that is the primary food for whales and seals and penguins and a lot of the animals that thrive in Antarctica. And krill is very abundant during the summers, because the cold water and the 22-hour-a-day sunlight is the perfect combination for producing lots of krill. And so that's why the whales come to Antarctica in the summers to feed, because there is an abundance of food there. Let's listen to Lisa again, our leader, as she describes a little bit about what this expedition is all about for her.
Antarctica is an incredibly dynamic place to visit. It doesn't matter if you're here day after day in the exact same spot, you're going to see the ice move in and out, the birds come and go, and of course the ever-changing weather. So it makes it a really exciting place to try to plan an expedition, as you're always having to take all of these factors into account, and then at the end of the day, everything coming together, and to see the smiles on everyone's face as they come in after their landing in Antarctica is what makes everything worth it.
So once you get to Antarctica on the National Geographic Explorer, how it works is that you make several trips onto the shore. Normally, we would go on shore for a couple, 3 hours in the mornings. And during lunch, they would move the ship somewhere else and we would go back ashore, typically in the afternoon, for another hour or two. So you go on shore for a couple hours, come back to the ship, have lunch, and typically go back on shore in a new location in the afternoon. Now, going on shore requires one to dress appropriately. So before I would make the trip to shore, I would put on a pair of insulated underwear, some jeans, a sweatshirt, a pair of waterproof pants over my jeans, some sock liners, some wool socks over the liners, a pair of rubber high boots that were appropriate for walking in snow and ice, a specially designed parka that was issued to us by National Geographic, gloves, and a hat. While I've never actually worn a space suit, I can imagine that getting dressed to go ashore in Antarctica maybe is a bit like donning a space suit. It was a challenge the first day because you don't have a huge amount of time. You eat breakfast and get dressed and head out pretty quickly if you're in the first group to go ashore, which we were the first day. Getting all dressed up in your gear got a lot easier after that. You really pretty quickly learn how to do it. Now let's listen to Melanie, our resident penguin expert, who tells us about her experience that first morning of landing on the continent in Antarctica and finding Adélie penguins.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to Antarctica. In fact, it's not just welcome to Antarctica. I'm standing right here on the continent, the highest, driest, windiest, coldest, and loneliest of our seven continents. But we're not lonely today. There are thousands of Adélie penguins just right over there, and we're really looking forward to going and having a look. It's fun that on our first landing, we're seeing Adélies. And Adélies are one of the three brush-tail penguins that we'll be seeing on the trip. The reason I like to see Adélies first is they are the penguins that are in the cold and ice. You can go north and see Gentoos, but you really got to be in the ice to see the Adélies, and that's what we have here.
Now during that same morning's excursion, we hear Melanie's husband, Kim, telling us about seeing the first penguin chicks that he's seen born this year. And if you listen carefully, you can actually hear my sister screaming in the background with excitement when she lays her eyes on those tiny penguin chicks.
See their heads moving.
Oh my gosh!
This is the first chicks we've had this season, you guys. This is very cool. Just think, everybody, while this one adult is on the chicks, the other adult is out feeding.
He's got two chicks on the chick. Yeah. Oh.
One interesting thing about the penguins is that they mate and build a nest together. And when one adult is sitting on the nest with the eggs, keeping the eggs warm, the other adult goes out to sea and feeds and then comes back. And the adult that had been on the nest switches places, and he or she goes out to sea to feed, so they share the parental responsibilities in that way until the chicks are hatched. So it's a very interesting division of labor there. They both do their share. Sadly, if a parent doesn't return, if something happens to a parent while they're feeding out at sea, the other parent will wait as long as he or she can for their partner to come back. But when the partner doesn't come back, the parent who was waiting will eventually abandon the chicks or the eggs and go feed because they will be starving by that point. So that's just the way Mother Nature works. There are some birds called skua that are predators of penguin eggs and penguin chicks, and they can fly around the edges of a penguin colony, and they keep their eyes out for any opportunity they can when a parent leaves a nest even for a moment. A skua might fly down and grab an egg or swipe a chick from the nest. Quite an interesting thing, the way the animals survive in Antarctica. In this next clip, Melanie describes the tuxedo and gentoo penguins, and you hear very clearly the sounds that these penguins make. And we would literally stand on shore just next to these penguins. In addition to being able to hear the vocalizations that they made, I was actually able to stand very quietly and listen to penguins crunch in the snow as they walked by. I could hear the sound of their flippers navigating through the snow. It was really fun and really exciting. But here's Melanie to tell us a bit more about the penguins.
They're the true tuxedoed penguins. White on the front, black on the back, and their tuxedos are ready to go. Well, not only do we have the Adelie penguins here at Brown Bluff, that's the ones that we expected to see, but every now and then you find a nest here and there of a gentoo penguin, quite a bit taller than the Adelie, up to about 15 pounds. They're the ones with the orange beak.
It's really awesome. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You see these pictures in National Geographic and all these different magazines, and now we're living it.
So great to be here after all the planning and all the time in the Great Passage. Now we're here.
So, in addition to the sound of the penguins there in that clip, you also heard the sounds of some of the other seabirds. How cool is that? On board with us, we had a number of divers who did underwater photography. And one of the things that they did every evening before dinner was sit down with us and recap what we had seen that day, what we had done that day. And one of the underwater divers named Dennis always did a very funny monologue sort of recap in conjunction with a slideshow that he had put together from pictures that they took underwater during the day. And this is an example of one of Dennis's recaps.
We did something different. We went out with the ROV, which is the robot that has no fear or sensitivity. But there was a piece of ice out there, an iceberg, and we figured we'd go look at that iceberg before we went anyplace else. So, blah, 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 got over there. And you notice that it's always got scalloping. You'll see the ones today. You saw some of them still had the scalloping in them. That's partly caused by the as the water flows across it. So it's this sort of laminar flow rather than a more disruptive flow. And it's just the ice will give way for it. This has got diatoms all over the ice. So it looks like dirty ice. And if you go up there and bump it with the ROV, the stuff will kind of bounce off. But we try not to do that too much. And then it stopped. But that wasn't the bottom of it because it's only about 25 feet down. It's a lot deeper. Very good day, very clear water. And the bottom, this place, Brown Bluff, you remember, there's all that big ice there. It's always getting destroyed, but there's still a very big community of things that are living there, especially scared little fish. That guy's probably about an inch and a half long. It's a notothanid fish. It does not have a swim bladder, so it cannot take and sit in the middle of the water column. That's one of the reasons why the krill are so important. And this is a crinoid, a feather star. And if you're a fossil person, you might know what those are. It's got little bitty feet just about. It can walk around on those. And it can swim with those arms that it has. And the arms just sit out there and collect stuff, comes up, and there's all these little tentacles, and it puts it down in the middle of it, and it takes it down to its mouth. These are sea urchins. They're at the height of fashion. You saw some of them. Here, they like to wear things on their heads. I like this snail very much. It does not have a shell. It's not a nudibranch. It's completely different. It's mantle, but it eats the ex-in-laws. And then it takes and it collects the things that are living on them that they can use as a defensive compound. Here's another sea spider, different species, has its reproductive organs, its tummy, everything down in its legs, so it doesn't ever have to worry about a beer gut because it doesn't have a gut. And they don't do much, so I did speed it up a little bit so it looked like it was at least alive. This was a little bit of a surprise. This was a cheerleader that's gone missing for years down there, and those are the pompons that she had. It's actually quite small. It's about 2 inches. It's a jellyfish, but it's a special one. It takes and it sticks itself onto the bottom. And when it wants to move, it has to kind of take and then, you know, take and turn over and on its pompons and then go over on the other side. Now, the monster of the day there, just sitting there, that's what ate the cheerleader, what was down there. And this is a big sun star. It's not an octopus because, oh, well, let's see, it has more than 8 arms, doesn't it? So, no, it's not an octopus, but it does look pretty mean. It's not a nice feather star. You can see the current starting to move, and these things just sit out there. And if you really scare them, that means shove the ROV right on top of it. They will take and get completely panicked and swim away, and then it's like every other arm is going one direction, the other one's going the other direction. They can do that for about 10 seconds, and then everything dies. Thanks.
So Dennis was describing his diving experiences at a place where we landed called Brown Bluff, and they actually used a robotic device to do some of the exploration while they were underwater. Now Justin, one of the experts in Antarctic ice, is going to tell us a little bit about the ice that we're seeing.
So we just finished up our landing at Brown Bluff. We're right near Anderson Island. And we came across essentially an entire bay full of one-year-old sea ice. And within that sea ice were some tabular icebergs. These are the largest icebergs we're ever gonna see. They're great big flat-top bergs that can extend hundreds of feet underwater. And they break off from ice shelves. Really flat, gradual, slow-flowing glaciers that flow into the ocean. They eventually break off and get into the Weddell Sea Gyre, spin around, occasionally they get grounded. This afternoon, we're going to cruise around. We're going to take a look at some of these massive pieces of ice.
Of course, any time, day or night, that the National Geographic experts saw something interesting, they would make an announcement on the ship's PA system, encouraging us all to come out on deck and see whatever they had found that was going on. Here's an example of one such announcement that Stephanie, our whale expert, made at 4:30 in the morning.
It's a really large group of killer whales scattered from the starboard side across all the way up to the port. But please come out and join us. Pretty spectacular sighting of killer whales.
And now another announcement that was made by our expedition leader, Lisa, when she spotted an emperor penguin. And this announcement really highlights the flexibility of our ship's captain and crew. They would maneuver the ship right around at any moment so that we could get a better view of whatever animal happened to be close by the ship. It was really very cool.
We are maneuvering the ship around so that we'll bring the bow on towards the ice floe where the emperor penguin is. He's just off the port side right now. So grab your jackets, binoculars, or join us on the bridge. The holy grail of penguins, the emperor penguin.
Early one morning, I believe it might have been Christmas morning or it might have been Christmas Eve. I think it was Christmas morning. We were out cruising in our Zodiac. And if I haven't already described a Zodiac. It's a raft-like boat that will hold about 10 people or so, has an outboard motor, and the Zodiacs are lowered from the ship into the water, and it's a way for people to go from the ship to the shore in Antarctica, and it's also the way that we traveled around to get closer to icebergs and animals and things like that. And I loved going out on the Zodiac cruises. We were out one morning and we were watching seals and a penguin on the ice. And then, lo and behold, another Zodiac pulled up with hot chocolate for all of us. It was pretty cool. So that's what you're going to hear in this next clip.
That's a kelp gull. Kelp or Dominican gull. This is one of our little pintado petrels right along the shore here. That's a Weddell seal.
On top of the ice there.
It's a leopard seal. Huge mouth on them. That's a big seal. Oh, there's a chinstrap penguin on the ice with it.
Good morning. You are very welcome to the most southern bar in the world. And we thought today we're going to cruise in style, so we have some homemade hot chocolate prepared for you.
Now you're going to hear from David, who's an underwater photographer who specializes in photographing the Antarctic environment.
Antarctica is an ocean at the end of the world. For Jennifer and I, we come here not just for the penguins, the seals, the whales, but we also come here for the ice. And the ice here is extraordinary. It's sculptural, it's beautiful. Ice is the final expression of water. What we want to do, the best thing we can do, is to dive here, come out of the water, and share our images with the guests who make all of this possible, get us underwater here at the very end of the world. This is the ultimate goal of the National Geographic Lindblad Expedition.
Now we have another nightly recap from Dennis after he and his team did a dive down to a shipwreck.
Here we are just down on top of the wreck at about 40 feet. Perhaps there is a little bit destroyed, but that's not where we're going to go staying. We're going to go down further. And there's a lot of debris out there, and so debris, oh, it can mean all kinds of things. Here's Bruce's sea star doing something very secret. When they're humped up like that, they're usually eating something, but I don't usually invite myself in until they tell me I can. Here's a couple of brittle stars. They're running. One of them is chasing the other one. I don't know if it's because of a purse snatching or what have you, but they don't have 2 feet, so they have to run. Here's Nudibranch. It's another one of the shellless snails, and it's not horns, it's antennae up there in the front, the rhinophores, and they're spongier, which is kind of fun, I guess, because sponges have all kinds of hallucinogenic drugs in them, so they're pretty stoned, but they don't drive vehicles or anything, so they're not really a danger to anyone except themselves. And then there's all the other stuff in there is sponges. There's a couple of anemones that are just grabbing anything that goes by and destroying their lives. Here's the propeller. The propeller wasn't turning when it went down. Now there's Santa Claus again. Santa Claus is everywhere. And then Santa didn't bring me anything. Oh, and there's a fish. We don't see too many fish. Oh, well, I probably got something. I got some chocolate and I got some
Red wine. Notice on his fish, it's about 8 inches long, no swim bladder, it just sits there, and they're pretty stupid, so you didn't want them to be swimming around too much. One of my lights. Underneath the wreck, we've got all kinds of things here. This is the in-law again, and then you get a little bit closer, and then it gets all sulky and stuff like that. So I don't want her daughter married me. There's the anemone hanging down. These guys really are nasty. They'll just grab poor little limpets and sea urchins and what have you, and just eat them and spit them out. And they don't do so much, but they're kind of fun. I had one as a pet, and it got itself onto the heater in the aquarium and it cooked itself. They're not really, really bright, but they are eating machines. Here's Santa. This shrimp has decided it really likes Santa. It won't leave him. He's trying to get rid of it. This wreck was a whaling factory ship. Those are vertebrae from whales. So they still have oil coming out. Here is suddenly a whole bunch of krill that we run into. So had the nice presentation by Justin yesterday about krill. And I thought they were larval fish at first because we've seen them there, but there's this whole group of krill. And Lisa told me she's seen them along this wreck before. And it is, there's something needs to be out there to be eating all of this this life, all of these diatoms. These guys can do it. They don't have, it's a lot of work. They're very, very small things you're eating and they don't have anything else to do. And they do like the lights. So if you have lights on, everything is fascinated by lights for the most part, if you're down deep enough for, or if it's the right kind of creature. Thanks.
In this next clip, Kim, one of the photography experts, among other things, is on Plano Island, which is one of the places that we landed, and he's describing the scene and the penguins, and you can really very, very clearly hear the sound of the penguins in this clip. There are also a couple of guests who were on the ship saying a little bit about their impressions of what it's like to be standing there on Plano Island.
Well, it's the day before Christmas, and we awoke this morning at 4:30 in the morning with killer whales in the Gerlach Strait. Tried to make a landing on Booth Island, couldn't get in there, not a problem, it's an expedition. We worked our way back around and landed here on Plano Island, and now we're up here among these nesting Gen 2 penguins. The sounds and the sights are spectacular. Great day.
I think it's so spectacular, you just can't capture it on a camera. It's amazing.
This is one of the most beautiful sights on Earth. I think that everybody ought to see this at least once in a lifetime.
On the trip with us, we had a man named Greg Marshall, who is a National Geographic employee who invented something called the Critter Cam. And the Critter Cam is a tiny camera that they can attach to animals so that they can observe them in their natural habitat, even underwater. And in this clip, Greg explains to us a little bit about his love of Antarctica and a little bit about the Critter Cam.
What a place, Antarctica. It's incredible. I've only had a chance to come down here 8 or 9 times now, but every time I come, I'm just absolutely enthralled.
I've been coming down here. First came down here to Antarctica to work with emperor penguins, to deploy critter cam systems on the backs of emperor penguins to see what they're doing once they disappear under the water here, under those ice shelves. There is just so much to learn, so much we can do with the critter cam system to find out how these animals are functioning in their world.
This next clip is of several guests making comments on their experience in Antarctica. And you really do get a flavor for how people saw what they were experiencing. Let's listen.
That was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. To have smooth water like that and crystal blue skies, that was awesome.
And the captain's ability to get us through that little narrow channel, I didn't think we were going to go. And we did. We went. And it was spectacular and worth every early morning wake-up call.
There's a sea of icebergs. I can't tell where we're going, and we're keeping on moving. So amazing. There's so many different shapes, so many different colors, even though it's all white and blue.
This is amazing and breathtaking. This place is just spectacular. There's nothing like it.
This next clip was from a Zodiac cruise where we were exploring the ice in a bay that was particularly filled with ice. And in addition to learning something about the ice formations, at the end there was a Gentoo penguin on the ice, or actually in the water sometimes. Sometimes it would jump from the ice to the water. Let's listen.
We like to do Zodiac cruises in here because it's called the Ice Graveyard. This is where these big old pieces of tabular bergs come in here and they get stuck because it's fairly shallow in here, at least compared to the ice. So they get this bang around here for a few years and get smaller and smaller, and the new pieces.
Does that glacier have a name over there?
No, most of these glaciers don't have names. And they get in here, they're parts of old tabular bergs. So they come off of the land, but they don't fall off a glacier like these pieces. And these may have broken off the Larsen B or farther south. They can last for years in the water because the water is colder than the ice is. Plenty of Gentoos on shore, but it's nice to see them in the water.
In this next clip, we hear from Melanie, our penguin expert, and I believe Jennifer, one of the underwater photographers, from on Peterman Island, which is one of the places that we landed. And that day, it was very, very warm for Antarctica, in the sun, probably in the 40s, upper 40s. And people were taking their parkas off and relaxing and just sitting down on a rock and watching the penguins, because the penguin colonies were literally right next to where we were sitting or standing. They asked us not to get closer than 15 feet to the penguins, but the penguins didn't have that rule. They could come closer to us than that if they wanted to, and they often did. They weren't afraid of us at all. In fact, a penguin came up and tried to peck a flower design off of one of my mom's boots. Kind of interesting. But anyway, in this clip, you hear from Melanie and Jennifer and some of the guests on the island there. Let's listen.
Wow, we are having a beautiful day at Peterman. Here we are at 65 degrees, 10 minutes south, way down here. And it is sunny and it's warm. In fact, some of the penguins look like they might be a little too warm. You can see them eating a little snow and sort of laying out. And we're laying out too. We're finding a nice rock and sitting down and just watching the world go by. We've got blue-eyed shags that have young, three little heads poking up. We've got adelies that have already got two chicks, and we've got gentoos that are still on eggs. So there's all kinds of things to look for here. But the best thing is just to sit down, take in the sun, and watch the action.
So welcome to the tropical island of Peterman Island. I'm sorry. Now we're here on Peterman Island. It's an incredible day, and don't think it could get much warmer than this. We're looking at some Adelie penguins. Small group is nesting here. They're in decline. They've been in decline since the time of Charcot, who spent a winter at this lovely island that we're at. We've also got some Gentoo penguins, larger groups of them. They're doing pretty well down here. It's a beautiful day.
Is that the head or is that the...
Yes, this is okay. Going to be the head.
We're trying.
Very warm.
That's why it's going to wear awesome. Sunglasses. Is that good?
That looks solid.
Now we hear from Rick, one of the National Geographic experts, who was speaking from Nikko Harbor, which is where we were on Christmas morning. You also hear a few of the guests in the background. You can actually hear people's boots crunching in the snow if you listen carefully.
Well, here we are, Christmas morning, another fantastic day. Nikko Harbour at its best, looking out over Amford Bay, the old site of the whalers and the site of many avalanches, as you can hear one going off in the back just as we speak. So this morning, this site we're here at Nikko Harbour is just a fantastic place. Penguins galore, all nesting happily on the exposed rocks, and a wonderful walk up to this vantage place high up above the bay.
Merry Christmas!
Of course, every expedition has its moments of insanity. And what you're going to hear in the first part of this next clip is people on one of the islands doing what's called the bottom slide, where they sit down on their bottom and slide down a hill in the snow. And in the second part of this clip, you're going to hear people doing something called the polar plunge. Now, the polar plunge is where people jump off of the kayak platform on the side of the ship into the ocean. The water temperature at the time of the polar plunge was around 30, 31 degrees Fahrenheit. So very, very cold. And if you're nuts enough to do this, you could jump off the ship into the ocean, and believe me, people got right back out. Some people who did it said that they had never felt more awake in their lives than when they hit that water. I did not do the polar plunge, nor did my wife Vicky or my son Graham, but some of the people in my family of origin did it. My sister's son's wife, and husband all did the polar plunge. Anyway, enjoy this little clip. Next, we went to a place called Couverville Island, and we hear several of the National Geographic experts describing Couverville.
This afternoon, we've stopped at Couverville Island. It contains the largest Gen 2 colony that you can find anywhere on the peninsula of Antarctica. It's a great spot to walk amongst the Gen 2s as they're in the middle of their breeding season. Also a chance to get a little bit higher up and look down on the ice that's come into the bay here and gotten grounded inside the shallow waters. Really nice visit to a Gen 2 colony here at Couverville.
Breathtaking. Amazing to be amongst all of these penguins, the ice.
I was thinking a lot about what it is that makes people so impressed about this place. And I think everyone has different words for it. I guess the word I'd use for it is the drama of the place. Everything you see is dramatic, and it's dramatic in a way that you haven't experienced before. The landscape is the most obvious thing, but also the life of the animals here, the numerous way they live in total harmony with the nature, and that's pretty impressive, and I think it captures everybody in one way or another.
Now we get to our final landing on our trip, and we hear Rick describe Port La Croix. And Port La Croix is very interesting. It's the only place that we visited in Antarctica that is inhabited, and it's only inhabited for the 3 summer months by people from Britain. This time there were 3 women and 1 man manning the items at Port La Croix. There's a post office there where you can send a postcard, and there's a small museum and gift shop there. Rick will explain a bit about the history of Port La Croix.
On the highway, on the highway.
Well, here we are again. I'm back home at Port La Croix. It always feels good to come back. Always warm and nice reception, and the penguins always seem to be pleased to see me. Even the sheathbills put on a good side of their face, yeah. Built back there in the end of the Second World War, and then ran as a science station right through to 1962, abandoned, and then recently it's just been put together. When I say recently, back in 1995, and since then it's just been a great success story. The base has become a very important fundraiser and museum for the United Kingdom Antarctic Heritage Trust. So people, when they come here, are lucky enough to be able to post their postcards at the most southern post office in the world. In addition to that, there are a few wonderful items in the gift shop, which I can assure everybody are unique to Port La Croix.
No one could be luckier than we. Nature never had a lock or key. Isn't that the way it ought to be?
So after leaving Port La Croix, we returned to cross the dreaded Drake Passage, which for us this time turned out to be the Drake Lake. It was very smooth and very nice. As we crossed the Drake Passage, some of us got together one night on the ship and played some music, passed the guitar around, shared some original songs and sing-alongs, and it was really a nice experience. We got to know some wonderful people on this trip. I hope we will stay in contact with some of them because we really did make some friends. I've never had an experience like going to Antarctica, and I'll never forget it. We got back into Ushuaia, Argentina, within about 48 hours. Unfortunately, after we left Port La Croix, which was our last scheduled stop anyway, it turned out that one of our shipmates became ill and needed medical attention. And so we made the fastest possible crossing of the Drake Passage back to Ushuaia to get our shipmate the medical care that he needed. So we boarded a plane in Ushuaia and flew back up to Buenos Aires, where we boarded another plane and went to Miami, and then flew yet another flight into Houston and back home. It was really an extraordinary trip, and it was very doable by myself as a blind person. While it's true that so much of the beauty of Antarctica is visual, I got a tremendous amount out of it. The descriptions that were provided by the National Geographic staff, as well as my family and even some other guests on the trip, were extraordinary. It was awesome to hear the sounds of the penguins and the other birds. I even heard some whales blowing when they would come up and take a breath. And it was a very educational and enjoyable experience. Even though I had some trepidation at the beginning and I complained last year about how I didn't like cold weather and wondered why I was going to Antarctica, I'm so very glad that I went. Until next time, so long from the Tech Doctor.